Good morning, Your Honor.
And before you begin, Ms. Farnum, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
I have none, Your Honor.
I have none.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chipman. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Dave Chipman, and I have the honor of representing the appellant in this matter, Justina Royer. This is somewhat unusual case where you have a young woman in her 20s, has a seven-year relationship that begins as a work relationship with the appellee, Deidre Teese. Within a year, it becomes a sexual relationship, and then within a few years, it becomes a sexual relationship with Deidre and her husband, Nathan. And that goes on for the course of the next 6 years or so. There's a text message sent to Justina on March 15th of 2022 saying, and this is from Deidre, saying, my therapist and I decided we need to end a relationship. In the petition by Deidre, she says that Justina texts her 100 times, makes 50 phone calls. The judge actually tries to clarify that in the record on page 26 of the transcript. And he's unclear if it's just on the 15th of March or if it went on for a period of time.
Page 26 of the Bill of Exceptions.
Bill of Exceptions, yes, Your Honor. And so the, and then also on the March 29th, Deidre invites or has Justina go to the house, and Justina goes to the house. She won't leave, or she's refusing to leave. Police are called. Again, there's no threats, no acts of violence. She does leave. And on March 30th, Deidre files this protection order as a domestic abuse protection order. And these are important facts. And so what happens is there's a hearing sometime in April where Justine asks for an attorney to be present. And then eventually there is an actual trial on the petition itself. And I should have mentioned before we even get to it, the trial, the district court issues an ex parte harassment protection order, even though Deidre's asking for a domestic abuse protection order. And these are, I think this is key, particularly considering the court's ruling in Yesenia O recently this past year, which is the judge goes in, he says kind of what I think the Sherman v. Sherman case initially contemplated back in like 2010, where it was, hey, you know, I can do this as a domestic abuse protection order, I can do this as a harassment protection order, or I can dismiss it. Those are the three options. And
so what's the importance of the judge's statement there?
Just the fact that he's acknowledging that there's the three things that could come out of this case. But Deidre's attorney, counsel, represents to the court, we're asking this to be a domestic abuse protection order. And the Yesenia O case says that once the petitioner elects their theory, their legal theory they're going to proceed on, that's the theory you go on.
Didn't counsel also say in the alternative we want the harassment protection order?
Only in the closing arguments, which were submitted after the end of the case. It's a short record, Your Honor.
You're not raising, are you, a due process challenge about the opportunity to contest which type of protection order applies. Here, as I understand your argument, you're making an argument that a person seeking a protection order must elect one path or the other and cannot proceed on an alternative choice. Is that a correct understanding of your position?
Well, not precisely, Your Honor. What it is that I think they have to say at the outset that, I mean, the judge said, hey, here's the two things I'm considering, right? And then she says, I want it to be domestic abuse protection order. And at that point, she had elected her remedy. If she said a domestic protection order or in the alternative, I'll seek a harassment protection order. However, even on page 19 of the Bill of Exceptions,
you think she's stuck with that when she makes that statement?
I think she is stuck with it.
Now, if we disagree, the court disagrees with your position on that. If we take the view that a person, as long as they've had the opportunity to submit evidence as to both theories that the trial judge may consider either one of them. What, where are we then in this case?
Dispositive of the third assignment of error. However, again, Your Honor, I think that Yesenia O takes you to the point of the petitioner gets to elect the theory. She elected the theory, and that theme was over and over again. If you look by the questioning, at least by appellant's counsel, they went on one premise alone, which is the domestic abuse protection order. If you read even the closing arguments, which were submitted after the close of the evidence, it's all about the domestic abuse protection order. So obviously the appellant's counsel was confused because they addressed only those issues which dealt with the domestic abuse protection order. Again, Yesenia O says they elect it and she elected it, and then you proceed on that, and to do otherwise is a violation of the due process of both, you know, basically of the respondent.
What about the fact that the existing ex parte order was based on harassment?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So didn't you all come to court thinking about harassment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, however, she stands up there and says, I want this to be a domestic abuse protection order. She elected her remedy, and everyone followed after that.
How does your argument about election of remedies fit with the legislative action, and specifically the legislative action taken after one of our most recent decisions?
Right. So the way that the law reads is basically you get to come to court and whatever one, you know, they can fit into anyone they want. But Yesenia, I believe, clarified, yes, that's true, but nevertheless, somebody must be put on notice. This is how the petitioner is proceeding. And Yesenia O, it was a sexual assault protection order from day one.
What was the legislative framework at the time of the hearing?
It was what Justice Castle mentioned, which is it can be any of the three. And so you come to court, it can be any of the three, but still there has to be some kind of notice of what the petitioner is proceeding on. In this case...
And is there a required to be an opportunity for an adjournment under the statute?
Adjournment as far as an opportunity to...
To recast your evidence to a new theory.
Yes, I believe that if... The way that I read the statute is if you come to court and the evidence starts appearing that, hey, really it's a harassment, not a domestic abuse, you get to recraft it. However, there has to be notice that's the way you're going. And here, they pronounce it to the court. This is where we're going. It's reaffirmed on page 19 of the Bill of Exceptions, even on page 32 of the Bill of Exceptions, again.
So, I want to ask you again, what was the importance of the judge's statement about what was going to happen the day of your hearing?
Well, the importance is the judge was trying to follow basically, I think, the guidance from this court initially, but again, the petitioner went and did not say, hey, you know, we're open to the harassment protection order. They said, we want this to be a domestic abuse protection order, and they continued down that road.
So from the standpoint of due process, your argument is what the court told everybody was less important than what the party seeking the protection order told everybody.
In the sense that they made the declaration and the court, it seemed to me, went down that path as well, even reaffirming this is the path we're going down on page 19 of the Bill of Exceptions. That issue is not necessarily dispositive of the appeal.
So,
go ahead. Sorry.
Before your time quickly expires, do you want to talk about the other issues that you believe are dispositive of the appeal?
I do. Your Honor, first of all, the issue with the children, there's zero evidence that these children were seriously terrified, seriously threatened, seriously intimidated. There's any issues like that would even come close to a harassment protection order regarding the children. That has to be overturned. That's absolutely, it's absurd. And then as far as the issue of threats, again, you have two dates, March 29th and March 15th, right?
So what are the threats?
Actually, there are no threats. I should say the speech that constitutes harassment.
She makes some comment about I'm going to kill myself or I'm going to commit suicide if you don't take me back. Is that a threat?
Well, we had this issue in the Delgado case, and There's no context, unlike in the Delgado case where the guy has a noose around his neck, he's in the closet. You know, it's very clear that, you know, what he's trying to, he's intimidating this person.
So this isn't a believable threat.
Well, Your Honor, we don't know. We don't know because there's
no
context.
What about the threat to tell your employer about the relationship? Is that not a threat?
It's a threat, but it's not an actual threat. It's not a threat. It's a threat that she has a legal, that she has the, she can do. It's not something that's illegal. She has the right, she has freedom of speech. Everything that she does has to be viewed in the lens of her right to freedom
of
speech.
Why is she making the statement, I'm going to out you to your employer? What is the purpose of that statement?
I think it's to know.
Is it not a threat?
Well, it could be a threat, but it's not a threat that is actionable. It's basically to say you're a fraud. I'm going to let everybody know that, you know, that you appear this way, in reality you're this way. You know?
Does the statutory language pertaining to protection orders require a threat of harm or a threat? The kind of protection order that the court issued here.
Right. So
it refers only to threat, doesn't it? Not threat of physical harm or.
It doesn't say. However, the case law, there's a case cited by both myself and the appellee's attorney, and it talks about the fact that. A threat is the plain and ordinary meaning of a threat is a communication, declaration, or expression of intent to inflict harm or damage.
Can harm be psychological or emotional?
It,
or does it have to be physical?
I don't think it has to be necessarily physical.
So it could be emotional or...
But again, and every court says this, that you have to look at it in the lens of her right to freedom of speech, right? So we know that... You know, that not all forms of speech are protected. However, if, let's say that somebody, you know, is, has an abortion, let's say, they go have an abortion, and you're an intimate partner with them, and they work for a Christian book club, and that's against, clearly, the owners of that book club. You break up, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to go and tell the book club that you had an abortion, okay? You have the legal right to do that. Is it unsavory? Absolutely. Is it unsavory? But is it an actual threat? No, it can't be an actual threat because that person has the freedom of speech to go and do that. While that's not good, you know, shows poor character, it doesn't actually, it should not be something that's actionable. We have to view these cases.
Are you saying that harassment can never be verbal?
No, I'm not saying that it can't be verbal. What I'm saying, though, is that you have to view these harassment protection orders in under the lens that a respondent doesn't check their constitutional rights at the door, you know, and they have the right to articulate themselves, to tell people their feelings, to tell others their feelings. And so in this case, how can it be actual when she has every legal right to go and do that? She could go
can
on Facebook.
Can harm be economic harm?
Economic harm? I don't believe under the harassment protection order that it could.
I lose my job at the Christian bookstore.
That would be some economic, but again, Your Honor, I'm saying that's not an actionable, you know, speech. That's an actionable speech because it's something you can do. I think it has
to. It's true.
It's true. It's also.
It's the defense is it's true. I could legally say it out loud, so it can't be a threat of harm.
Correct. It's my right to do that. It's absolutely my right to do that. And if it results in harm, so be it. But it shouldn't be an actual harassment protection order because you're unduly restricting her freedom of speech. And so it has to be something that seriously, that's directed to seriously terrify them. That
aren't fighting words? Aren't there some limitations on the things you can say to people, even though they may be true?
Absolutely, absolutely. In a sense of, you know, you're a wimp, and I'm going to beat the, you know, living, you know what, out of you. You know.
Well, let's not get personal.
No.
Counsel, was the First Amendment argument that you are presenting today presented to the trial court?
No, and I don't believe it needs to be, Your Honor, because I think the court has to understand when they're issuing these protection orders, just like the due process rights apply to the respondent, that they walk in that door with the freedom, you know, with that right of freedom of speech.
I'd like to shift your attention just a moment to the statute that defines a dating relationship. And as I understood the argument that you were making, you were suggesting that this evidence did not establish a dating relationship because of the infrequency of the intimate associations. Is that Is my understanding correct?
Your Honor, I was not trial counsel in this, but I don't believe that that was necessarily an intent of Ms. Royer. I think she concedes that they, you know, if she would have done something that would have arose into the level of domestic abuse protection order, they were in a sexual relationship, they spent 3 to 5 nights.
So you would concede, I take it, for purposes of this appeal, that it fit within the definition of dating relationship?
I would say yes, they were in an intimate relationship.
Then I don't need to spend more time on
that. Yeah, so they were there, but at the end of the day, and I'm out of time, I appreciate the court's honor, if I could just briefly ask for the relief, which is, we're asking the court to overturn, this court to overturn the district court's decision on the basis that of the due process, but also for the, you know, and this court does review this de novo, that these were not actual threats or communication. They did not rise to the level, basis of the cases that we cited in a brief, to issue warranting a harassment protection order. And in particular, there's absolutely no evidence as to children, and it must be overturned as to both the children and also as to Ms. Teese.
If we were to agree with you as to the children, would we send it back to the district court, or would we just affirm or modify the opinion?
I mean, I think you just reverse it and say that on your de novo review that there was, you know, there's no...
Well, I think the question was if there's enough for the adult but not for the children,
right?
Do we modify to just delete the children and leave it stand on the adult? I understand you don't agree with that outcome on the adult, but... I think that was the question posed.
Yes. Yes, I would say that you would reverse it as modified.
Would the proponent of the protection order for the children be able to just go back and file another request for a protection order for the children again and put on more evidence?
They could, but good luck, because she was like, you know, she was a nanny. She had a great relationship with the children. There's no, absolutely no evidence. I mean, they trust, up until March 15th, they trusted her to pick up the children, you know, from the child care. She was an integral part of life, spent I know what people I don't trust in my home for three or five, surely not 3 or 5 nights a week. There's just no basis for it. They just threw it in there. Even though you add the children, they're held to the same standard, which this court necessarily hasn't addressed, you know, with specificity, but it still applies, you know, that you don't just get to add people. Every single person you add has to be held to the same standard. I appreciate your time, Your Honor. I will clarify, I was not calling you Webb. I appreciate this court time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Farnan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors.
My name is Annette Farnan. I'm with Heartland Family Service, and I'm here representing the appellee, and I was the counsel at the district court level as well. I'm here to argue that the trial court did not err when affirming the harassment protection order. The facts of this case are straightforward. The appellee, Deidre, and the appellant, Justina, had a friendship. That friendship progressed into a romantic relationship. Deidre ended the relationship. Justina didn't want it to end. Justina wouldn't accept that the relationship was over, and she proceeded to harass and threaten Deidre. The final straw occurred when Justina showed up at Deidre's house uninvited, and she wouldn't leave. And the police had to be called in order for her to leave or to make her leave. At this point, the only way Deidre felt to keep herself and her family safe was to seek a protection order. At the hearing, Deidre had to prove beyond a preponderance of the evidence that the facts supporting the affidavit and the protection order were true.
Safe from what? Safe from what? You said the only thing she could do to keep herself safe. What was the concern that, what was Ms. Royer threatening to do?
Well, she was several things. She was not, she would not accept no for an answer. She was harassing her, repeatedly contacting her, and the record is full of, there were numerous text messages. In fact, at one point, Justina even attempted to hack into Deidre's Alexa Echo device in order to talk to her.
Is that on our record?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I cannot tell you what page, but, and actually it's in the affidavit for the petition, which was received without objection, and the facts in the affidavit were then as well verified through the testimony of both the parties. Other threats, quite honestly, are when she threatened to go to her employer and out her. That is a threat. That's something that she had not shared with her employer.
Is that information that appears to be true? Is that a defense if it is true?
A defense for Justina that it's not a threat?
Correct.
I think you have to look at what the intention was when she made that. The record is full of, and Justina's actions are wonderful examples of the fact that Justina did not want this relationship to end. And it ended, and Justina kept doing more things, and it kept escalating more and more and more. So yes, when she threatened to go to her employer, it was one more way of her saying, if you don't continue this relationship, this is what I'm going to do.
So it's extortion or intimidation, is that
exactly? Yes, yes, she attempted to control her. There was, as far as the children are concerned, you know, I cite a case where it says that if there's a credible threat to the party, that can transfer to the children.
Well, the case you cited, wasn't it that physical assault occurred in the presence of the child? The child saw it. A little bit different.
It is
different. Factual situation.
It is different, but the facts are this.
Is there any evidence the children were around when this altercation occurred at the home on the 29th?
I don't think there's any evidence in the record as far as the children's presence, but what is in the record is the fact that Justina made it very clear that she felt she had a familiar relationship with these children, that she wasn't going to give up on the children any more than she was going to give up on Deidre.
Your opponent is taking what I perceive to be a two-pronged attack with respect to the procedure involved. And part of the attack is that his client was deprived of due process in not knowing what was on the table, so to speak.
Right.
And what I perceive to be a different prong of the attack is that there was an election of remedies made by you or your client during the course of the hearing that would or should preclude the court from going any which of the three directions the statutes seem to permit. How should we sort out those two lines of attack?
My argument is that for the due process, each one of those issues, whether it be a domestic abuse protection order, and there's a due process issue, and whether or not there's a harassment order and a due process issue. For the domestic abuse protection order, I would argue that there is no due process, or, you know, we're not appealing it. It wasn't granted, so there can't be a due process issue there. As far as the harassment protection order is concerned, the judge made it very clear from the beginning of the hearing what he was going to do. Both parties had ample opportunity to address those issues. The appellant's counsel did not ask for a continuance, did not bring up due process, and in fact actually put on evidence. The due process argument as far as the harassment protection order should also fail because it was actually the appellant that requested that hearing. It was very clear that we were doing a hearing for harassment order as well. So for those reasons, I think that due process argument fails.
You said a harassment as well?
Oh,
had
I'm
you
sorry.
Elected?
We went for, well, the original filing was for a domestic abuse protection order. The judge signed a harassment protection order. At the hearing, the judge made it clear that he was going to consider the three things. I also raised I requested the domestic abuse protection order then in addition to the harassment protection order. Then the judge made it very clear to counsel and parties that he would be considering all three things, a domestic abuse protection order, harassment protection order, and whether or not the harassment protection order should be...
I spoke over Justice Cassidy, who
I'm sorry.
Has better questions.
So for that reason,
And the thing is, there was no limitation on time either. It's not like the judge said, I've heard enough. The judge gave everybody ample opportunity. If counsel for the appellant didn't present enough evidence as far as the harassment protection order was concerned to overcome their burden to show cause why it shouldn't be entered, that's not on the appellee. That's the fact that the evidence wasn't there to overcome that burden. The record is complete with many reasons why this harassment order should in fact be entered, and that's why I believe it was entered.
Given the legislative scheme that is now in place, or that was in place at the time that we're talking about, and after some of our decisions dealing with due process, is it your position that as long as the parties understand what's potentially on the table as far as a harassment protection order or a domestic abuse protection order and have the opportunity to present evidence and make arguments, that a petitioner for a protection order may proceed on parallel tracks?
It is, but I also believe that if the petitioner attempts to proceed upon the parallel tracks, I believe the respondent should have the opportunity to request a continuance or ask to have the matter bifurcated so that there would be actually two separate hearings.
And what would be the reason for two separate hearings?
Only because there's the concept that it is, that there would be potentially different evidence. I think most likely what the court would do, just practically speaking, would grant a continuance and allow the parties to come back.
To return to this record, wasn't it clear that both domestic abuse and harassment were on the table?
Yes, Your Honor, it was.
Did the court say he would consider them simultaneously?
I don't recall, Your Honor. So, and I do want to add, as far as the closing argument that was written, it was not just simply written about whether or not there should be a domestic abuse protection order. That argument was made, as well as whether or not there should be a harassment protection order kept in place. No other questions? Thank you, Your Honor. Oh, I would ask that the court affirm the lower court's order of the domestic abuse protection order, including the children.
I do have another question.
You mean harassment?
Harassment. I'm so sorry.
Since you brought up the children again, in our juvenile cases, we often talk about the constitutional right of parents to supervise and so forth, have custody of their children. Does that have any bearing on this particular protection order case?
Yes, I think it does. And that's because a parent has a right or a duty to protect their children. By placing the children, my client was fearful. She was scared. Justina would not let it go. She just kept coming, right? And the more that she said, no, there's going to be no relationship, the more things continued to escalate. Because they were escalating, I think a reasonable parent, a reasonable person, because of some of the things that she had said about the children, requesting to have shared photo albums that were of the children, I think it's reasonable for that parent to be concerned that this would then trickle into the children's life. And that they were, if you will, if mother's in the line of fire, they're in the line of fire. Any other questions? Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, counsel. That concludes arguments in Teese versus Royer. You are excused. The next case of the day is Noland versus Yost.